The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
To Deputy Sheriff Bill Whittington, Marin County Sheriff's Office, San Rafael, California, from Samuel Spade, San Francisco, license number 137596, subject, The Battles of Belvedere. Dear Bill, by this time I should have known better, and I did. Per square mile, there are more screwballs in your stamping ground across the bay than should happen even to me. But Belvedere Island is very small, and I'd always been very curious about it. I can see it from my office window. A little green hump rising out of the water just around the corner from the Golden Gate Bridge and connected to the mainland by a narrow causeway. But I got there the stylish way. The sign on the dock we made for said Battle Landing. I thought I knew what that meant because my client's name was Jonathan Battle. But I was not quite prepared for the beautiful welcome I got. Golden is the word that best describes her. From the gold sheen of her complexion to the gold sandals on her delicate little...
Case is that, Dr. Sawyer?
Please do not interrupt the free flow of my thoughts.
Pardon me?
Naturally, my ego feels a subtle resentment against my id for asking you for your help. What makes me think I need a detective?
Well, my id was just asking my ego the very same question.
Oh, you too feel resentment. We must analyze that later. Bring me your dream material. Now to the key.
Oh, yes, okay.
This woman was referred to me by her physician. She has suffered a complete nervous collapse because she thought she recognized a certain person crossing a street. A person she had not seen for years.
Who was that?
My patient's son died under mysterious circumstances 3 years ago. And the woman she thought she saw was her daughter-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
It was widely reported in the newspapers at the time. Perhaps you remember it. Carter Hamilton.
Oh, Roanoke, Virginia. Mm. 1946. Mother accused her son's wife of murdering him. Daughter-in-law was hauled up before the grand jury, but not indicted. Dropped right out of sight afterwards.
Good, you know that case. Well, actually, my patient is suffering from an agonizing sense of guilt. Unconsciously, she thinks that she herself murdered her son.
Did she?
Well, there may be something tangible at the bottom of so profound a feeling of guilt.
You mean you want me to help you convince her that she really is guilty?
No. That is for me. But first, we must find out... What we must find out.
Hi, Sam. Hi, Sam.
Come on. Bring your book. Got a pencil? We got to hurry if we're going to make the fight, you know.
Well, I've got one of the new refractor kind of pencils.
Well, get the lead out.
Are you really going off the post, Sam?
It's Man McShelley versus Cluck-Faced Duffy and the Man of that. Ready?
McDuffy? Sounds like an MP.
McShelley. What?
Aim and fire, Sam. TVX.
F, you've been out with somebody else. A military man.
Well, how did you ever know?
Date, August 2-8-1949. I don't know whether we'll go out or not.
You're clairvoyant.
To Dr. Albert Kensington from Samuel Spade.
I only had a cope with him, Sam. He was on furlough and we...
License number 137596. Subject...
And he was from Elkhart, Indiana. And I used to live in Pleasant Lake and...
Down, Effie. Subject, Helen Scully of the Prodigal Daughter. A cope yet. Dear Doctor... Everyone in San Francisco knows the castle-type hill house that Casper Scully lived in, even if they didn't know him. When I got there, there was an all-black 49 convertible in the driveway, and slightly smaller, same color, a Russian wolfhound wearing a spiked collar and expression to match. He broke his chain when he saw me and ran in the back of the house. That should have told me something, but I plunged the doorbell and was admitted by a butler named Stanley, who left me standing in a draft in the library, looking at a cold television set. I pulled up my coat collar, took a plant in front of the fireplace, and lit a cigarette. Pretty soon, things started.
Spade is here. Says you're expecting him. But I don't find him listed in your appointment book.
Don't be an idiot. Send him in.
You may go in now, Mr. Spade.
He always like that?
He's nice today.
Sorry, Mildred. That's your name, isn't it?
His office is the first on the right.
Don't bother. I'll find him.
Thank you. I'll just go to lunch.
Mr. Champion?
Well, don't just stand there. Come in and shut the door. What I have to discuss with you is private. I don't want that snoopy niece of mine listening to our conversation.
She's out to lunch now. But does she listen in often?
All the time. Why?
She didn't know who I was.
I outsmarted her there. I called you from the drugstore on the corner. I don't want anyone to know who you are or why you're here. Oh, now, where did I put that lighter?
Behind the inkwell.
Oh, yeah. I'm a dangerous man to play games with. Joseph's found that out once, and if he keeps this business up, he's going to find it out again.
No games, yet dangerous.
Say, are you mocking me, Spade?
Just wondering what you're talking about.
I just told you. You got ears, haven't you? Joe Joseph's is back in town, and I'm not going to fool around with him.
Mildred told me you were nice today.
Oh, she did she? Well, Mildred talks too much. That's what's the matter with her. She talks too much.
And you'd fire her, only she's your niece, and you'd have to pay somebody else three times what you pay her to take everything she has to take.
Get out of my office!
Scully suffered a severe accident many years ago that affected his throat and his respiratory tract. He smoked.
Oh, of course, I understand, Doctor. Sorry, Mr. Scully, I didn't...
Yes, thank you, Spade. This is not generally known, but the unfortunate accident in the chemical plant also robbed Mr. Scully of his vocal power.
I see.
Yes, the modern doctor, the physician of today, is a far cry from the general practitioner of yesteryear. Today, we must know the mind, the psychological quirks, he must follow through completely on a case. Mm-hmm. He is sometimes, as I am today, a confidant, an executive officer for his patient. He is a friend, to say the least, eh?
Oh, yes, to say the least.
Eh? Oh, of course, Mr. Scully, to the point, of course. Sit down, Spade.
Oh, thanks.
Now then, Mr. Scully, as you well know, and the world knows, has made several fortunes in his lifetime. And he didn't accomplish this by allowing people to run roughshod over him. But, Mr. Scully, I'm just backgrounding, Mr. Spade. Please be patient. Mr. Scully intends leaving his daughter Helen his entire fortune. A great deal of money, to say the least.
Say the least. But Helen doesn't care about the money. She's foolish, young, headstrong, and impetuous.
Huh?
I heard her arguing with Mr. Scully a bit.
Now, Mr. Scully. We'll straighten all this out. Mr. Spade will help us. Well, then, Spade, you have half the problem right there. She is a headstrong, impetuous girl. And lately, she's done several things to displease her father. Right, Mr. Scully?
Would you like a drink?
Well, not right now. Can I fix you one?
In about 20 minutes, maybe. I'm still wondering...
How they located you? I think the elder Mrs. Hamilton saw you on the streets.
Oh, is she here in San Francisco?
Yes. Is that so surprising?
No, it's a large city. What is surprising is her staying on after learning that I was in town.
She's not very well. In fact, I think she's had some kind of a nervous breakdown.
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm very fond of her, you know, in spite of everything.
No, I didn't know. Maybe I should explain. I'm a private detective local. I was hired here in San Francisco to bring these papers to you.
Oh, you found me.
You seem to be a little slow introducing myself. I'm sorry. Sam Spade.
Well, if it had to be a detective, I'm glad it's you. But I can't help wondering why they didn't send a lawyer.
And lawyers cost $50 an hour. I only cost $10.
Oh. In the private eye stories, it's always $25 a day and expenses.
I wish those writers would get abreast of the times.
I'm sure they'll catch up. But if you're being paid by the hour, perhaps I can keep you here a little longer.
I'm glad you said that.
You remind me of someone.
Pleasantly, I hope.
Yes.
Really? Well, really, Mr.
Spade, Sam Spade.
Well, really, Mr. Spade. I'm only waiting for Lenny to get here so we can make the first curtain of streetcar. And we're going to be late if he doesn't get here. You can understand that, Mr. Spade.
You're going to be a little early. Streetcar doesn't open until Monday.
And I'm all ready, and he hasn't shown up. Well, good night, Mr. Spade.
Hey. The white ermine cape you were wearing and the black strapless thing needed a touch. But you had it. A diamond necklace. In fact, the tears of night, the same one I had in my pocket, Daphne, was hanging around your lovely neck. I rebuzzed your buzzer and knocked on your door for quite a while until it was quite evident that you were not going to open up. Under the hallway light, I snapped open the necklace case. Mortuous, you had said. And mortuous was what it said stamped inside the case. A gloomy word with a gloomy address. The White Hotel on Turk Street.
Hannibal Mortuus, at your service, sir.
If ever a man had the look of death, it was this one who had its name. He was older than old, cadaverous, and in his skull-like head, his eyes were white. He was wearing a flannel nightshirt.
You find me a bit indisposed, Mr. Spade. The clerk at the desk said it was a matter of jewelry. Therefore, Hannibal Mortuus is at your service. Now then, sir, what is so urgent?
I came to ask you about a diamond necklace. I found your name stamp on the inside here.
House of Mortuus, the most respected name in diamonds, as well as all the lapidary arts. Most respected. Fine jewels and the name Mortuus was synonymous the world over. I am the last of four sons. But what continues, Mr. Spade?
Well, I just want you to take a look at this.
And how do you come in possession of the Tears of Night, sir?
Well, a man named Johnny McCall, who runs a gambling club, hired me to deliver it to a lady named Daphne Arlington. She lost it at the roulette table. She left it there until she could raise the cash.
Deplorable, deplorable conduct on her part. Daphne Arlington, most indiscreet young lady, to be sure, to be sure. I recall my interview with her when her late husband, Sidney, ordered this necklace. A lovely body, propelled by a ridiculous mind. For shame, such conduct, a gambling house, the Tears of Night, a pond.
Well, this is real, Anne? It isn't phony?
Mr. Spade, I am a gemologist. The House of Mortuus. Of course it's real.
Take a good look.
When an artist...
There's a man named Joseph.
Come in. I was expecting Aggie, but come in.
Thanks.
I always fix my own dinner. Poached egg and half and half. Ulcers. Name Spade?
Yeah.
Want an egg?
No, thanks. I'm on duty.
Mind if I finish?
It's up to you.
Who's your client, Spade?
Elliot Champion. Joe Joseph's back in town, and he's been making telephone threats and throwing 38s around.
38, huh?
Mm-hmm. You know where he is?
Joe was a nice kid, but a calendar job. Born with one war going on, a depression on deck, and another war in the hole. Makes a difference. The calendar got him. Everything was against him at the trial, too. I couldn't do anything. He thought I let him down and told me so. He got real sore when they read the book at him. Threatened Champion and that private dick,
Lem Drigger.
Drigger and everybody else. Said he was railroaded.
You were his attorney?
I know, but he didn't have a chance in a million of beating that rap. He thought I ratted when I took the guilty plea in court's mercy, all for a lousy $2,000. Well, he's done his time and he's out now.
He hasn't gotten in touch with you?
Nope.
No threats?
Nope.
Ever write to you from prison?
Nope.
Any idea where he'd be in time?
Nope.
Is it possible he has a mother?
Nope.
Then I guess I leave you to Aggie.
We play records. Aggie used to be a violinist.
Well, it's up to her.
Spade.
Yeah?
If you find...
Stop. I'll be brief. 20 years ago...
Oh, here we go.
Marcus and I were having a go at the east slope of Nanga Parbat in the Himalayas when our pack train encountered an avalanche which swept us bodily across the border into Tibet.
Oh, bet.
Our carriers were decimated, but luckily, most of our gear remained intact.
What kind of contraband were you carrying?
Contraband into the bed. Oh, I say, really? No, matter of fact, we were traveling light in the hopes of bagging a few brace of bar-headed geese.
Foul play, eh?
Allow me to finish. We arrived in Serar, a valley adjacent to Lhasa, to find the religious community in an uproar.
Mm.
It seemed that in their haste to create a new Tashi Lama, the native astrologers had misread their stars. In short, they had vested in the holy monastic robes an infant girl. She was not 16 years of age, and due to make a public appearance of a thunderbolt of Vajra.
Please, the interruption. Sorry.
To make a long story, a young adjutant in my company by name Leslie became smitten with her charms and offered to take her off their hands. But unfortunately, from their point of view, certain irrefutable temporal awards had been conferred upon her at the time of her accession. Among them, a mountain worth several billion pounds. On our journey back to the Punjab...
Hey, wait a minute. Did you say this girl owned a mountain?
Precisely. A most amazing...
Worth several billion pounds?
Yes, it's the gold, you know. The presence of gold in the Serra has long baffled geologists for the simple reason that it's an unnatural deposit.
Unnatural?
Synthetic, that is. For 13 centuries, the devout have made pilgrimage thither to implant in the mountain small gold nuggets in the ignorant belief that they will grow into large lumps.
Mm-hmm. How many centuries did you say?
13. Oh, very well, 12.
That's better.
Needless to say, the small nuggets never do grow into large lumps.
Needless.
But until they do, the devout, with the exception of the aforementioned and or her nearest relative, are forbidden to carry off any of the gold.
And who is the aforementioned?
That dear little girl whom Leslie carried off to the Punjab as his bride. They had one daughter, Chandra. The girl who met you at the landing this morning.
How did battle get hold of her?
Well, sir, a few years back, As our company was marching along the east face of Nangar Parbat,
there was an avalanche.
Precisely. And poor Leslie perished miserably.
Mm-hmm.
But the ungrateful scamp, in spite of his many promises to me, had left instructions that Chandra should become the ward of that presumptuous paint puddler, Jonathan Battle. He forbade her to see me, and finally left India under cover of night, taking her with him.
So you finally tracked them down on Belvedere Island.
Exactly. And my plan, if all else failed, was to win her hand in marriage.
What if she objected?
You little comprehend the Oriental mind. She's a woman. She must do what she's told.
Mm.
All I had to do to turn the trick was to frighten Battle into giving her the necessary fatherly instructions. So, you see, his death has come at a most awkward time. By the way, who do you think did old Battle in?
I think he was killed by the rifle held by that warrior he was painting, the figure your boy Marcus posed
for. Oh, hello.
Oh, that's nonsense. Marcus was with me at the time.
I don't think Marcus had to be there. I don't think anybody had to be there.
Well, that settles that. Marcus, Marcus, take the marmalade. We're leaving. Never mind the crumpets. We'll leave them for the poor.
Oh, delight, very delight.
Sherry's desk was even more interesting. What I found there led me to, one, call her home. Result, no answer. And two, to revisit Attorney Speezer. I found him poaching another egg.
All right, I'm here. It's late, Aggie. What's the idea? Unless it's Beethoven, I don't... Oh, Spade.
Aggie, have a show?
Yeah, left early. Has to work tomorrow.
Oh, it's too bad.
What's with you? Still looking for Joe?
Yep.
Any leads? Wish I could help you, Spade.
Elliot Champion was shot and killed in his home tonight.
No.
That all you have to say?
Joe do it?
Maybe.
Well.
You don't seem scared for a mouthpiece Joe didn't like.
If you mean should I be next, no. I'm not scared, Spade. The kid should realize by this time I liked him and did all I could.
You've been here all evening?
Aggie.
Could you prove it?
Yep.
You may have to. Did you know Mildred Champion was married to Joe Josephs?
Yeah. How'd you know? It's a secret.
I found this marriage license in a desk drawer.
Nosy, huh?
I found something else. Champion didn't pay his income taxes all the time.
A lot of people are like that, Spade. Me,
I... Glenn Drigger testified against Joe at the trial, so did Champion. Mildred worked in the office, but she didn't testify.
Wife can't testify against husband. Real good story, Spade. But what about Joe?
Champion had something on Lem Drigger, and Drigger had something on Champion. Joe's in between. You tell me, huh?
Oh, no, thanks. I didn't come to drink.
Oh, how'd you get in? Walk under the door?
Oh, in a gay mood, ain't you?
I'm a cheerful type.
Had a busy day, Spade?
Oh, ran a few errands. You know, there's an ugly rumor running around town, Freddie.
Huh?
They're saying Uncle Mike Sheldon played sucker for this Monica Weston dame, that she was shaking him down and he got tired of it, what with the election coming up and all.
Yeah?
It's a fact. And they say she didn't commit suicide at all.
Well, where'd you hear this?
In Union Square, while I was feeding the pigeons.
You think I'm kidding, huh? You think I'm kidding?
Now, wait. You know what happens to boys who play with guns, Freddie?
Shut up. Come on, go on, answer it.
Okay. Hello.
Speed?
Yeah?
Still very at Cal Pictures. Listen, about that cheesecake shot.
Oh, now, Luella, don't take on. So I didn't mean it that way.
Luella? No, I'm talking about the cheesecake shot down at the depot.
Luella, honey, the girl is only a good friend. It's all your imagination.
It's not my imagination. We found the print in the files, and it's here. The secretary just pulled a boner.
Whatever do you mean?
Someone named Mike Sheldon called, and she told him that we had it. Now, he's on his way here to pick
no,
it up.
No, listen, Luella, don't do it. I'll be right down. Sorry, Freddie.
No, you ain't going nowhere, Chase.
Look, Freddie. Okay, about 15 seconds.
15 seconds?
12 now. And if we're lucky, we'll find out how your foster father was killed.
Sandra, he has no right. You don't have to do this.
5 seconds.
Whatever happens, it'll mean your license, Spade. You have no right...
2 seconds.
Sandra, get down!
You cancer. Of all the high-end, dishonest, reprehensible. How badly she wounded.
Take it easy, Captain.
Oh, trusting little girl.
She's all right, Sherry. If she keeps away from you, she'll stay that way. Come on, Chandler. Give me a hand. Are you all right?
Yes. But poor Bob.
Yeah, poor Bob. He only killed his own father.
just fine.
There, now, don't fret about it. I'll take care of you, my dear.
Catherine, hands off.
My dear fellow, you mistake my motives. What this poor girl needs is a father. And what better guardian than myself and my vast knowledge of the Orient and my deep understanding of the Eastern mind?
Nuts.
Well, Sam, I sure got to hand it to you. It worked. I guess this just about cleans up this caper.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you, too, Captain. You've been a great help.
Oh, thanks, Woody. It's been a pleasure knowing you.
Same. Why, you dumb bunny.
Who, me?
Standing there shaking hands with the most sinister international dope smuggler on the Pacific coast.
Now, see here, Spade. That will take some proving.
Frisk him, Bill. Go on. See what you find on him.
I welcome this opportunity to prove my innocence. Go ahead, deputy.
Well, what do you know? A hypodermic kit, see?
This is an outrage. You planted that in my pocket, Spade.
Well, maybe. Even if I did, the deputy here will have to take you in for questioning, and that'll mean answering some questions for the federal men, won't it, Bill?
Well, now, if you planted that kit, Sam...
I haven't admitted it yet. You'll have to prove it, and you may not be able to before the federal men get involved. Not that Captain Sherry has anything else to hide.
Well, sir, never let it be said that a Royal Fusilier didn't know when to blow retreat. Marcus, Master, yes. Touch the marmalade again. We are off, this time to Africa.
Period. End of report.
But Sam, you let him go.
I know exactly what you're going to ask, Evie. It worked like this. At a certain time of day, the sun rays were refracted through the crystal directly on the spring metal clamp and the trigger guard of that rifle. This caused the metal to expand, thus pushing the trigger and discharging the rifle, which had previously been aimed at the spot where Battle customarily stood while painting.
But Sam...
Don't interrupt. To further confuse the issue, as well as splitting an infinitive, not to mention a hair, Bob, son of Battle, loaded the smoothbore rifle with a cartridge containing a slug previously fired from his revolver, thus drawing attention away from the rifle and onto the revolver, which could not be placed in the locked room at the scene of the crime.
Sam...
Please, these interruptions. His motive... He thought his father was, in fact, going to force Chandra into marriage with Captain Sherry.
Oh, that poor boy. He did love?
Perhaps, but don't forget the billion-dollar mountain.
But he leapt in at the crucial moment and interceded with the bullet meant for her. He died perfect.
He undoubtedly will have, but at the expense of the state and not of my conscience. In short, I loaded that rifle with a blank cartridge. He was not dead when he hit the floor, merely in a dead faint. No, please, please, no applause. Business as usual. Go type that up.
Whatever's going to become of that poor, bewildered girl?
Yeah, poor little thing. Nothing to fall back on but a billion-dollar gold mountain.
Well, I can't help it, Sam. You know, east is east and never the twain.
You're wrong. She's starting a twaining course tomorrow as a...
Now he's dead. What can you or I or anybody do about what they've done to him? Look at me, Mr. Spade. Go ahead, look at me. I'm not what you'd call beautiful. I'm not even very pretty. Nobody would ever look at me twice. Well, Joe looked at me. And he loved me. Now he's dead. And I'm dead inside. I'm dead inside, and I'll be glad when I'm dead outside.
Period and a report.
Oh, Sam, they were so unhappy.
Yeah. I had a notation that I won't be around for the coroner's inquest.
Sam, you can't do
this. This report, when duly notarized, should be admissible as testimony. I want to get out of town for a few days. Sour racket.
Not even out till next Tuesday.
What's it doing here?
Oh, look at them. See these.
Who are these people here?
That's Sam Spade.
What?
On the radio. You know, Howard Duff. He plays you on the radio.
Howard Duff. Why don't I play it on the radio?
You're not the type, I guess.
Yeah, look here. Sam Spade dictating to Effie. Hey, she's not bad, you know. Not bad.
Oh, really? That actressy, I thought.
What is it?
Levine Tuttle. Levine. That's the name. It's so actressy.
As Bill Spear, Spade producer, gives final instructions. Look at him. He has 9 o'clock shadow. Well, come on. Let's get out of here. Go to the fight.
Oh, Sam.
Hmm?
Then I can't say it.
Say what?
Well, if you're taking me to the fights, I can't very well leave and say goodnight, Sam, can I?
Well, you can try. It's expected, you know.
All right. Good night, Sam.
Grins. Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Loreen Tuttle is Effie.